Hello and welcome to this week's message from Valley Church. Catch up on more messages and hear the latest from Valley Church online at valleychurch.eu/messages or download them from iTunes. For more information about what's going on in the life of our church, visit valleychurch.eu. Enjoy the message.
This morning I talked about God's love. If you weren't here this morning, why the heck were you? No, seriously, where were you? You should have been here. I was here. I've come from Newcastle. Anyway, but I just talked about there's no more of God's love. There's just more for us to experience. And this evening I want to talk and continue that theme really on there is more. So this morning was about what we can experience. This evening is about what we can do. Purpose, mission, whatever you want to call it, that's really what I want to talk about this evening. Mark Twain coined a very famous phrase. He said, two of the most important days of your life are the day you were born and the day you discover why. It wasn't actually Rick Warren that wrote that. But you see, fairly recently, in the last couple of weeks, I did quite a high-level leadership course. It was a secular course. A lot of high-level business people from across the world were there. And it's called Authentic Leadership, this course. And really, we spent 2 days, 12 hours a day, trying to come up with and define our personal purpose in life. People want to know, what am I doing? And is what I'm doing actually of any value at all? I want to know not just that I'm doing something, but actually that I'm doing something useful and something with purpose. So really, this evening, I guess I want to help you get a glimpse of your purpose, if that's okay. You see, how we see the world is how we define our reality. The problem is that for most of us, we tend to see the world through the lens of the media, the social media, the internet, the information that we have all too readily at our fingertips. But we also see the world and we define our reality through our past, don't we? And if you think about some of the hurts and fears that you have, you define your future often by how you've been treated or how you've treated other people in the past. Some of those experiences that you've had, good and bad, failures and successes, will define, you will see the future through those lenses. For example, how do you see marriage? You see, you might say, yeah, I love the idea of marriage, but maybe your parents had a messed up marriage. Maybe you've had a marriage that's fallen to pieces or falling to pieces, and so your reality of marriage is colored through those experiences of your past. You see, our worldview is the framework with which we view reality and not only view it, but actually make sense of our world. We look and we see things, and we see things from very different perspectives. And therefore, it affects our response to every single area of life. And our worldview will affect what we see our purpose in life to be. How we see the world will affect your purpose. What you define as your purpose will really be defined how you see the reality of your worldview. Maybe some of you here this evening are questioning your purpose, or maybe you're even questioning whether you even have a purpose in this world at all. I believe that Jesus comes to show us a new reality, comes to give us a new world view. So even Jesus, in the time he was on this earth, you'd often hear him, his disciples would hear him say, you've heard it say, but I say. And with those subtle things, he was actually helping redefine people's worldview. You've heard it say this, but I want you to know that it's actually this way. You've looked at life this way, but I want you to tweak it, and I want you to look at it this way. Let him without sin cast the first stone. You maybe remember the account of the Pharisees when they threw the woman at Jesus' feet and said, look what she's done. And Jesus said, yeah, I get that. I understand. And they say, the law says this. What are you saying? And Jesus said, that's fine. Let's obey the law. But hold on. Before you do that, those of you without sin, and some commentators actually believe that Jesus said, those of you without this sin, which adds a whole nother dimension to it, those of you without sin, cast the first stone. Yep, fully believe in the law. Go for it, chaps. You see, Jesus was twisting their view of reality. He also said, unless you become like a little child, how do you do that? You know, the really smart guy, Nicodemus, coming to Jesus and saying, how do I become born again? And Jesus is saying, unless you become. You see, he was trying to change people's worldview, their perspective on reality. Romans 12, verse 2, if you've been around church for any period of time, you'll have probably heard this verse quoted. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. See, what Paul was saying to the church there was, don't allow your worldview to be formed and molded by society. Your thinking, don't allow your thinking to be squashed, to be formed, to be molded into the pattern of this current transient cultural worldview. And I believe that he's saying to us exactly the same things. Don't have your worldview, your reality squashed into this current culture that's going to change. Allow it to be transformed by the renewing, the bringing back to life of your mind. And out of that, he said, once you do that, you'll actually know the will of God. And really, what I want to do this evening in these next few moments is show you purpose and God's will for your life. That may seem like a huge statement, but if you'll follow me with it, I really believe that you'll go out here knowing your purpose. I'll ask you a question. How do you see your faith? If you're a follower of Christ, how do you look at your faith? Do you see it as a private affair? This is my relationship. There's a famous interview with Tony Blair, and Alistair Campbell was there many years ago, and Tony Blair was asked about his faith, and Alistair Campbell immediately jumped in there and he said, we don't do God. You see, it was okay for Tony Blair to have a private faith, something that he held close to his own heart, but don't allow that to become public knowledge. Don't allow your worldview, how you see politics, how you see people, don't allow your faith to inform your politics and your people view. Maybe for some of you, it's what you do at the weekend. I go to church. Maybe it's deeper than that, but it's actually still just an individual faith, my relationship with Jesus, my purpose. See, I believe we need to ask ourselves the question, will we allow Jesus to inform, to shape, to mold our worldview? Have you ever prayed and asked God what his will for your life is? God, what do you want me to do? Often we're asking for specifics, aren't we? God, who do you want me to marry? Or more specifically, God, please just anyone. Dear Lord. Maybe it's about a job. God, what do you want me to do in church? What's my role? What do you have for me? And we ask ourselves those questions, or we ask God those questions. But when we begin to see with a Jesus worldview, we begin to take on a Jesus purpose for our lives. 2 Corinthians 5, 18 to 21 says this, all this from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry, the purpose. Whatever word you use, this is what it's saying. He gave us the ministry of reconciliation. You can ask lots of big questions of God. What do you want me to do? What's my purpose? But God here very clearly is saying, I have given you purpose. The purpose, the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ. You see, we can say, but God, that's big stuff. I want to know specifically. But God says here, so what I gave, the ministry, the purpose I gave for Christ, that's not good enough for you? Is that what you're saying? Let's have a conversation around that, shall we? Not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. When you read that, there's some really strong words in there. He's committed to us. He's handed over. God's saying, I've done what I need to do. I sent my son to die on the cross. I've done, it's finished. Jesus himself said, it's finished. It's complete. The work is done. Now I'm handing the baton on to you. I've committed to you this message of reconciliation. You want to know what your purpose is? It's the message of reconciliation. Bringing people back to Jesus. We implore you. God has committed to us. Be reconciled to God. His ambassadors. You see, God's making his appeal through us. I don't know if you've ever thought about it in this way, but God's words in his mouth are just, sorry, God's words in your mouth are just as powerful as God's words in his mouth. You see, too often we invite people to church instead of inviting people to Jesus. Now, I love church. Absolutely, passionately love church. But you see, I want people to meet Jesus. That's simply it. I have no bigger purpose within the life of the church than to help people meet Jesus. So be reconciled to God. We are his ambassadors. You see, when we take on a Jesus worldview, it doesn't matter about our job or our role in church or outside of church, because we begin to live out his mission and his purpose through every single thing that we do. Paul, who was a mentor for the young pastor Timothy. Paul, if you don't know who he is, wrote a lot of the New Testament. See, a lot of the New Testament, we take verses, don't we, and we apply them to our lives, but actually Paul was one of these writers who wrote to churches or to leaders of churches. And so when we're thinking about what Paul wrote, we've got to take it in the context that he's writing not to me, he's writing to us. You see, and Paul told Timothy, be an evangelist. Actually, what he said to Timothy was, in doing what you do, and being the pastor of a church, and you think, well, of course, a pastor should be an evangelist. No. Here's what I do. Christine Kane, anyone heard of Christine Kane? Jay John, all of those. You know, they get on an aeroplane, and by the time the plane has taxied away to the runway, they've got the whole plane saved. And by the time they're in the air, you know, they've found some water and they've baptized them and they're all speaking in tongues. Me? Yeah, I put my headphones on. Don't speak to me. Don't talk to me. Don't touch me. I'm in my zone. See, I'm not an evangelist, but I want people to meet Jesus. And so Paul is saying to Timothy, it doesn't matter what your gifting, what your ministry is, what you do. In doing what you do, tell people about Jesus. Introduce people to this, the person, the love, the grace, the mercy of Jesus Christ. Do the work of an evangelist. You see, there's more. There is more work to be done. John 4, verse 35 says this, don't you have a saying, it's still 4 months until harvest. I tell you, open your eyes, look at the fields, they are ripe for harvest. See, this is a an account of Jesus, and it's a well-known account of Jesus with a Samaritan woman at a well, and they have this conversation around water and all of this stuff, and the disciples come in at the end of this conversation. And as Jesus is telling his disciples, as he's saying this to his disciples, there's a group of people on their way from a village led by a woman whose mess of her life was the message of her life. You see, she'd messed up. She'd been married a few times and out of that marriage into another relationship. And so she was a messed up woman. We don't know what had happened to her, what these guys had done to her to leave her in this place where she's just trying to get a validation from anywhere and anything. And so obviously people knew what she was like, knew the mess of her life. And she comes back saying, "You got to come and see this guy. He told me everything about my life. Come and speak to him." You see, her mess became her message. And as she brought people into that place where they're going to meet Jesus, Jesus is saying to his disciples, look up. You need to look up and see, because any moment now there's going to be a whole group of people that are going to be coming here that are ripe for harvest. The disciples were challenged to see the harvest in front of them. Some of you in this place may look at the mess that your life has been and think, "Yeah, but I've got nothing to say." The reality is, it's that very mess that Jesus can take and say, "Yeah, but your neighbor, that person in your workplace that knows about your life, that knows who you are, that knows what you've been through, knows maybe what's been done to you," when you begin to tell them what Jesus has spoken into your life, your mess becomes your message. Jesus says, "Open your eyes, look." This isn't something that's a long way off. This isn't something that you can put off because they're on their way. And either you're part of the solution or you're part of the problem. And Jesus is challenging his disciples to their purpose, to what they were there for. This story is centered around a well, as we know. It's a story of thirst. I don't know if you've ever thought about thirst, but thirst is a really strange thing. There's two aspects of thirst, intracellular and extracellular. Our thirst drives us to drink. The extracellular aspect of thirst will drive us to drink. But actually, when thirst gets into our cells, we don't even know that we're thirsty. You see, and that's the dangerous aspect of thirst. When we don't know that we're thirsty, we're actually already dying. You see, we can have an internal thirst, but we don't know that we've got it, and it's causing us to slowly die. And Jesus was saying to this woman that it can fill the internal thirst and the external thirst. In Matthew 9, there's a similar story. Jesus uses a similar analogy about the fields. And Jesus is looking out at the crowds of people that he sees before him. Matthew 9, 36 to 38 says this: "When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like a sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field.'" See, very similar story. The fields are white. Things are ready to happen. And Jesus is looking at the people that are following him. And he, you know, where the disciples just see an awesome crowd that are coming in, Jesus sees people that are hurting, that are helpless, that don't know what to do, that are thirsty on an intracellular level. Jesus is saying to the disciples, "Open your eyes. You think you're trying to follow me to learn how to do life better, to learn how to get from the Bible much more, how to have purpose. But Jesus is saying, if you look out there, you'll find your purpose." We've got to ask ourselves a similar question. Am I looking? Am I seeing? Because the problem isn't with the harvest. The problem, Jesus didn't say, hey, look, have a look. You've got to go out and look for where people are. He said, no, no, it's there. They're in front of you. The problem isn't with the harvest, because Jesus says, pray to the Lord of the harvest, not for the harvest, but for the workers. Pray to the Lord of the harvest for the workers. He's saying to the disciples, hey, pray, because you're the answer to the question that is being asked. You see, there's more for us to do. And Jesus is saying, do you see what I see? Open up your eyes. Look up. Get your eyes off the things that are immediately in front of you. Begin to look out. Or are you more concerned about my relationship with Jesus, my growth, my purpose, my self-esteem, my self-actualization? Because Jesus is saying, take your eyes off yourself. Begin to look out there, because there are people out there who need what we have. Are you prepared? Jesus was saying, are you prepared to do what I'm prepared to do? And we know that after that, Jesus took himself to the cross and was crucified. Jesus was saying to the disciples, are you prepared for that? Are you prepared to lay down your life? Because there is more to do. Your friends at work, your friends at school, at college, at university, they need to meet Jesus. Stop praying for them. Stop praying for yourself. You know, at the end of every single service, we pray for people in our world. I don't pray for the people particularly, but the prayer that I pretty much always pray is, God, give me opportunity. God, not only give me opportunity, but give me courage. Not only give me courage, but give me wisdom to know what to say, when to say it, and how to say it. I'm not praying for people out there. Every single person needs Jesus. Whether they know it or not, I'm praying, God, do something in me that will cause me to step into their world. And the challenge that Jesus was given in both cases was, look up. You see, people out there, they're ready to meet Jesus. Jesus knew his purpose. Luke 19, 9 and 10 says this. Jesus said to him, today, and he's talking to, this is the account of Zacchaeus. Jesus said to Zacchaeus, today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man, that was Jesus, came to seek and save the lost. You see, Zacchaeus was a man who wanted to meet Jesus. Jesus knew that his purpose, his mission, was to seek and save the lost. The problem is we can often tend to think of the lost as those that are lost in drugs, in poverty, in sexual immorality. But the thing is, those are the lost that know they're lost. Those are the lost often that have the extracellular thirst. They know they're thirsty. But the problem with most people in our lives is that they have an intracellular thirst. They don't know that they're thirsty, but they are slowly dying inside. Many of our friends are dying and they don't even know it. Many of those are lost in work, in family, in materialism, in self, in politics, in pursuit of pleasure. Our pastor, Pastor Gary, has begun to talk about this phrase, living the Jesus way. It's not a catchy slogan or just a piece of merchandise that we can buy as a piece of clothing. It's actually about living in the way that Jesus lived his life, with purpose. Not just as an example for people to follow, but as a purpose to help people come back into created order. Religion is about people looking for God, but Christianity is about Jesus looking for us. See, Zacchaeus was on the lookout for Jesus. He went looking for Jesus, but the reality is Jesus found him. And for many of us, many of our friends particularly, we don't know, they don't know what they're searching for until what they are searching for finds them. How are they going to meet Jesus? They're going to meet Jesus through you. When we begin to stand up into our purpose, this ministry of reconciliation, this ministry, this purpose of helping people come back into the place that they were created to be, which is in relationship with Jesus, They don't know that they're lost. Pray for the laborers, Jesus said. It's not for the harvest, it's for the laborers. I love our church. I love church. I love being here in your church. But church is not the main thing. Are we bringing people to church or are we bringing them to Jesus? Now, church should be the place where they meet Jesus. This place is, it's like a hotbed of where people are going to meet you and they're going to meet the Jesus in you. But we're not bringing people to see a band play and to see the lights and the videos. We are bringing people to meet Jesus. There is a harvest. You see, when Jesus looked out, he had compassion, and the vision that he had for people comes from the compassion that he had for the need. Jesus had compassion for them. He didn't feel sorry for them. Have you ever seen someone on the street and you feel sorry for them and you walk past? You see, Jesus had a compassion that compelled him to do something for them. He felt pain. That's what that word compassion that's used there actually means, a twisting of the gut. He felt physical pain for the people in front of him. We should begin to pray, God, do something in me that causes a pain, a deep-seated ache for people. When we begin to live the Jesus way, it's not nice. There'll be an ache in our hearts that will cause us to go into situations that most people won't go. Jesus had compassion on them in the same way that he has compassion for you. The question for us as followers of Christ is, do we feel the same? Or is it just a feeling sorry for people? Maybe we've become so busy getting on with life that we've forgotten about our purpose. Or are we allowing Jesus to form our worldview? Are we living the Jesus way? You see, there's a harvest. We can ignore it. It's there. But the question is there anyone to do anything about it? Jesus said to his disciples, lift up your eyes, because from that we know they hadn't seen it. They weren't looking out with compassion on people. They didn't see, they may have seen the crowd, but they didn't see the hurt. The shortage is not with the harvest, it's with the laborers. It's our responsibility to bring them in, not just to church, not just inviting people to church, but to introduce people to Jesus. I mentioned this morning I have to go to Germany. My wife loves to go to Germany. I have to go to Germany to visit the... sorry if you're German in this place. I apologize. I love Germans. But it's the in-laws that's the problem. But we go to Germany and we go to this place called Karl's Strawberry Farm. Now, it's awesome. Lots of fun. We play on the tractors there. They're pretend tractors. There's a maze. How cool is that? Cornfield full of that they've made into a maze. You can buy bread. You can buy jam. You can buy toys. You can buy knickknacks. There's even a car park across the road. It's awesome. Karl's Strawberry Farm. Do you know what it's not? It's not a flipping farm. It used to be. You see, it has the look of a farm. People go to it. Kids love it. It's fun, but it is not a farm. Its purpose has been to attract people to its amenities. And there's a temptation for the church, for us, to do exactly the same. Have we become so enamored with church and what we can do and the amenities that we have that we've forgotten we are about Jesus? You see, a farm is totally and completely reliant on a harvest. It can only survive a short time without a harvest. But Karl's Strawberry Farm has no need of a harvest. On the strawberry farm, the joy comes from the outside. People coming into the farm and buying things and being part of the fun that they've put on. But on a real farm, the celebration comes only from the harvest. We as a church have a mission. We have a purpose. You as part of the church have a mission and a purpose. And you can allow your purpose and your life to be formed by society's prevailing but temporary worldview, or you can allow it to be formed by Jesus. In the account of Matthew 9 about the harvest, the very next verse, Jesus sends his disciples out. So he says, pray. Hey, guys, why don't we pray about people going out? And then he says, go out. You see, he sends them into their purpose. And we are told, they were told to take on the mission. And we, in the same way, are told to take on this mission. Jesus said, if they receive you, they receive me. And ultimately, they're receiving the one who sent Jesus. Jesus was sent out of God's love for the world. John 20, 20, Jesus says, as the Father sends me, so I send you. And in doing what we do, we're not just going on purpose because we have a purpose. We are going on purpose, with love. You see, we are being sent out because Jesus had this twisting gut compassion. And in the same way, Jesus sends us. He sees the world, he sees your friend at work, and he sees your neighbor, and he sees what they're going through, and he sends you into that situation because he feels the pain, and he sends us out in love. There's more work to be done. There's more people in our world that need Jesus. And the question, I guess, for all of us is, do we represent him enough so that people want to know him? It's not tell me about your church, it's tell me about your Jesus. That's what we need to get back to. And please don't think that I am disrespecting the church. I love her. She pays me. It's great. I love the church, but we are the vehicle to take Jesus's love to the world around us. I'd love for the musos to come back. We are a people. We are a community, a church with purpose. And that purpose is to represent Jesus to our world. To go with compassion and love into our world and to represent who Jesus is and what he's done in our life in the world that he has placed us in. There is more harvest, more than ever. I don't know if you look around at the moment, you just look at what's going on in the G7 and all that sort of stuff, and the world's a messed up place. The world is messed up. It needs Jesus. Doesn't need a cool church. It needs Jesus. Doesn't need more celebrities, even Christian ones. It needs Jesus. It doesn't need a Christian political party. It needs Jesus. It doesn't need an amazing worship team. It needs Jesus. It doesn't need a great welcome in church. It needs Jesus. Believe me, we are the ones he has commissioned to do that job. When it comes to the harvest, when it comes to what's out there, the people in our world, he doesn't have a plan B. He's given you that purpose. See, there is more work to be done because there is always more people.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. Why not follow us on Twitter at @valley_church or come visit us at one of our locations on a Sunday. To find out more, visit valleychurch.eu. Have a great week.